I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 459. What the F is F?
Best
girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister
and I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Penda.
Hey sister over there, what's up?
Not too much. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing. I'm getting my voice back bit by bit. It could be worse, but you know.
I mean, it's all about recovery. You know, we fall down, but we get up.
Now it's just when you party too hard.
Don't say that, because I partied like I
you
was
You partied 20. Harder than me. But I'm just saying, because I don't have that built-up party tolerance the way you do.
Well, hold on. Don't make it sound like I'll
no, just
party, because that's
no,
not
you
true.
Don't. But you know how to keep yourself at a good level of partying.
I do. I know how to maintain my
your
chill,
party flow.
If
and
will.
Me, I'm just like, woo! Party, and then I go all the way up to 11.
Yeah, no.
And then I immediately regret it.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, when
and then
partying,
I have 3 days where I strain to speak because
right.
I just
because
move all over the place.
Exactly.
I'm just fluid.
See, you go from 0 to 11. See, what you got to do is you got to come into the joint at like a 4, and then by like an hour and a half in, you've worked your way up to a 6. Then you maintain at 6 for like the next hour and a half. Unless the music is popping or something like that. Then you move up to an 8, okay? And you really try to leave the night at 8. You don't want to go straight to 11.
And I just,
because if you go to 11...
Then like, you sound like
at
me.
At the party, then you lose your voice. You sound like you can't hold your liquor. Like, all things happen. If you leave the party at an 8, see, then you can go to the after party. And that's when you can work up to like a 9, 10. Mm-hmm. But you never go full 11.
No.
Never go full of blood. On that Red Bull, you never go full 11.
And on our and it's a family party, and when we all get together, like, the energy just kind of forms with this giant gelatinous party demon, and then there are shots that aren't shots happening.
Yeah, see, that's
and
what happens.
Bad life choices, and I was like, I gotta get out of here.
So we went to a family affair last week to celebrate the birthday of one of our aunts. And like Panda said, when our family gets together, like, we come from a long line of partiers.
Yeah.
Like, our family is really kind of like a co-ed fraternity.
Except we all related.
Okay. Well, I mean, brothers and sisters, right? That's what you got, sorority sisters and fraternity brothers, right? So, I mean, we're like a co-ed fraternity, okay, that just never, ever leaves campus. So we don't always get along and we don't see each other, but when we throw a soiree... Everybody.
Like, it's a white party all the time.
I mean, everybody from, like, young to old turns up. We turnst up. And see, that's the problem. You come into one of my family affairs, and we're there, and my family's there. Like, they come in at an 8. See, again, you gotta start at the 4. But right. They come in at an 8 because they like, woo, we out the house. We got a babysitter. We don't got to be home. We remember what it was like when we were young. And all the
and,
young
then,
people,
and some people play it cute. Like, they come in and like, oh, I'm going to have my like little fruity drink that I'm going to eat.
Yeah,
like, they play it smart.
It's okay.
And then the shots come. And by shots, I mean like a glass that they're just downing of tequila. And I'm like, I got one. And I was holding it. And I'm like, No.
You saw me walk away from that. I was like, oh, no.
I was like,
no.
I can't. Like, I had to get myself out of the situation.
I was like that.
Or the bad life choices happened, and then I'd come home with a tattoo on my face.
You know? Like, I was like that gift of the cat going, no.
And I was
just
like,
walked away from that.
And I'm holding it like, yeah, I'm totally going to swing this. Pour this into an empty cup. Thanks for the shots, bro, but I'm out. And like, and I walked away with just this. I can only imagine what the rest of them walked away with.
You can't like do the Chinese food before the shots. Like if you're gonna do shots, you got to do shots first. Because lo mein and tequila are not friends.
They just with slosh each other. Around in your innards, and then you're feeling all kinds of bad.
See, but you left me. You left me. And then what had happened was,
see,
like I was at eight when
he was
left.
Testing you. The devil was testing you.
No, it was our auntie. So I was at an eight. And I was just chilling. You know, music finally got good.
Oh, good. I'm glad it finally got good.
Mostly because I jacked my phone in when I took over Eric's phone. Our cousin who was trying to play DJ, he was not doing a really good job of it. I fixed it.
Can I say this before we get into the show?
I'm trying to share my bad life story so that we can get into the show. And you is interrupting.
Sorry.
Rude. Anyway, so I had made my last good choice of the evening. I cut myself off from drinks. I was going to close out my tab because I'm an adult. And I realized I had like another 45 minutes of dancing I needed to do and some more crab rangoons I needed to eat before I could go home. But what had happened was our aunt and uncle were turned up because there was another round of shots after you left. I did not participate in that round of shots either. It was noticed that I did not participate in that round of shots. What appeared before me was a mini scorpion bowl. Now, you can fake a shot and be like, oh, yeah, I tossed it back and toss it over your shoulder because everybody puts their heads up. They don't look. So you'd be like, woo, oh, that was so delicious. But you can't do that with a scorpion bowl because it's a bowl of alcohol.
Yeah.
You can't just chuck a bowl of alcohol over your shoulder. So I had to drink it. Poor life decision. Because after all my dancing, I had to eat more crab rangoon. I went to McDonald's. I got myself a sausage, egg, and cheese. And McMuffin.
From that late night
and a
menu.
Hash brown. Yep. Because, you know, you need the greasy. You need the greasy. Yep. So I'm sitting in my car eating my little egg McMuffin and my hash brown, trying to get my chill back. And breathe. I got the wind going, the music going. And the next morning I woke up with just look at my husband because it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon when I woke up and I had to go have lunch with another auntie. So don't end your night with a mini personal scorpion bowl when you started with tequila and vodka. Just don't do it and make good life choices.
Make good life choices.
So that's how we came into the podcast in recovery mode. I, however, was not yelling and hooping and hollering because I didn't go to 11 like Panda did, which is why she has no voice and I do have voice.
I got some voice, but I do have some voice missing.
Yeah, but at least it's not Peter Brady-like. So
that's true.
With the adventures of the weekend out of the way, let's talk about games and anime and stuff because, man, oh, man, in case you haven't noticed, if you're a gamer or you are a comic fan of any type, really, holiday is upon us, people. We've been talking about it for a while. We all knew it was coming, but man, oh man, like, it's hitting really hard. Rhode Island Comic Con just finished up. Lots of really great stuff came out of that. Some additional Funkos are available. So if you are a collector, it is a really good time of the year to let people know what's on your Funko wish list for pop vinyls. Because they're great. I'm working on completing my Guardians of the Galaxy set. So at this point, I just need Gamora and Star-Lord, actually. I've got Rocket, I've got Groot. I've got three Groots, actually, of different kinds, including a baby Groot.
I am Groot?
Yep. I've got Drax. I've got a lead on a Thanos. So I just need Gamora and Star-Lord to complete my set, and they will then decorate my office desk, which will be awesome, because they are all going to be pops that do not come out of their packaging.
Oh.
Most of my pops, I'm not a hardcore collector like a lot of people and keep them all in their boxes. There are some pops that I really do like for display and I will keep in their box, but most of them I buy because I really just love those characters, and so I want them out and about, and I do like to arrange them and things like that, so I do take them out. So I have a Baby Groot that is in box, but I have a Baby Groot that is out of box, and then I have a out-of-box Groot with glow-in-the-dark hand that I got from Loot Crate. So I probably at some point will pick up a Groot that is in box, just for the display at my office, because I don't want people getting their grimy fingers on my Guardians, but... for the most part, I'm not a hardcore collector in that things stay in box. I do like collector's editions of things. And I do like to acquire really cool replicas from various games or characters that I enjoy. Like, I will at some point get a Assassin's Creed Kane Sword. I love it. I love the game. Finally finished it. I will get a Kane Sword. At some point, it'll probably be after Christmas. So if anybody needs a hint for what to get me for my birthday, outside of gift cards for the Container Store, that's a good place to go. Just saying, if like you were wondering, that would work. But every Amiibo character that I've purchased has come out of their box. They're on display on my mantle. The same thing with all my Disney Infinity figures, because I play the game, so they obviously come out of their box and their packages for me to use. So there are very few things that I collect that I actually keep in their packaging and, like, put away because I want them to accrue in value. I'm not that type of collector. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with being that type of collector. It's just not the type of collector that I am. Okay. So a lot of great things that came out of Comic-Cons this year with announcements of awesome Funkos. I do want the Mockingjay series Funkos. Because there are a couple of different Katnisses and things like that. I definitely want to collect those ones because I really enjoy the books. I like the movies, and I just love Funkos of really fun characters. So there's a lot more that I'll be purchasing over the year. So if you hadn't had a chance to check out the Funko website, definitely do. If you've got someone in your family who's a collector or who you want to start on the path, this is a great, great year to jump in because there is a bunch of great Funkos. They even have a bunch of X-Men characters, and it's the throwback to the old school Uncanny X-Men comic books. So they have old school Storm in her white outfit.
Ooh.
As opposed to Halle Berry Storm. So
yeah, I'm glad though about that. Because I love Halle Berry.
I do. She's a strong, smart black woman. What's not to like? But
She's not Storm. Can I, Angela Bassett, forever my Storm.
I love Angela Bassett. And Angela Bassett will always, like, in my heart of hearts, be Storm. But even if they were just like, you know, hey, maybe not Angela Bassett because she might be a little too soft and not a lot of people own her. Like, Storm is supposed to ultimately be this badass chick. Grace Jones ain't doing anything.
Okay.
I'm just saying, Grace Jones. Grace Jones was available. Grace Jones would look amazing with short white hair. She's still fit and a commanding diva. I would buy her as a Weather Witch. I would buy her as the leader of the Mutants Underground. I would buy that in a heartbeat. I would believe that Hugh Jackman would want to hit that in the future.
I don't know anyone who wouldn't hit that.
This is what I'm saying. So, like, don't tell me she wasn't available, because I know she was. So, but hey, that's neither here nor there. I'm not a casting director. Let's talk about games and anime. Like I said, holiday is really kicking off heavy. Call of Duty Black Ops 3 dropped this week. Bunch of people bouncing into it, and I know that Call of Duty is kind of like a divining rod in the community. You either love it or you hate it, but here's the thing. To me, a good game is a good game, and if there are people that enjoy a franchise, then it's a good game. It just might not be a good game to you, and that's cool. You don't have to like every game that's ever made, but you do have to respect that there are people who do enjoy that game and like that game, and so you shouldn't just shit on them because they do like that game. I would not classify myself as a COD head, but there are definitely Call of Duty games that I owned, that I've played, that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the first Black Ops games that I played. I enjoyed the Modern Warfare series. So, you know, I give credit where credit is due. I'm not a multiplayer fan, just because there are a lot of people that multiplayer is their life. That's all they play when it comes to FPSs.
The only multiplayer that I play all day, every day is Splatoon.
Splatoon is a good one. But I just, every time that I've jumped into multiplayer, even when I've done like the early, like day zero things, I get killed. Because there are people that, you know, they play that shit like they're professionals, like they're part of MLG. Some of them even are, but there are a lot of people who just, that's their shit, so they're excellent at it. And it takes the fun out of it for me if I can't even remotely compete.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying that I want to be the baddest person on the map and I won't play unless I can kill everybody, but when you spawn and you get shot on your spawn.
Yeah, spawn camps.
Camp
kills. Snipes.
It just, I mean, do you? Good shot. You got me. But if you kill me 6 spawns out of 7, I'm not coming back. I'm just going to go to campaign and play a campaign. Or I'm going to play with my friends and just my friends in our own little situation and be amongst my like kind, my kindred spirits, if you will, who are, you know, not no scope heroes, and try to have a good experience that way. So I actually did not jump into Black Ops 3 as when it released. I have not played the game yet for a couple of reasons. There are a lot of games getting ready to come out and that have also come out. You know, I've just finished the main story, if you will, of Assassin's Creed Syndicate. I still have all kinds of side quest things to do. So I will complete
that. I just started playing that thanks to your generosity.
You know, I'm like that. And trust me, I think that you will really enjoy it. But I'm curious to hear when you get into it, like, your thoughts.
I just got to London. Like, I'm really at the first flipping of the page. Really.
Yeah.
But I could talk a little bit about it, but I have other things I want to talk about first.
So. Yeah. But Fallout 4 and Rise of the Tomb Raider come out this week.
Yep. Oh, man. And my money!
And so as I sat looking at the calendar of releases, I went, okay, am I really about to drop $80 on Black Ops 3 knowing that literally 4 to 5 days later, I am going to more than likely be picking up both Fallout 4 and Tomb Raider. Now, let's be honest. Fallout 4 is going to take a ridiculous amount of time to complete.
Yep.
Okay? Any way you slice it. Because since it's not really linear, you don't really have to move the story along if you don't want to. You can just explore the fucking wasteland forever and never move the story forward if you don't want to. And there's a little bit of an appealing thing in that thought process of, there's just a world out there for me to explore. It's kind of like the ultimate Star Trek, like, nerd fantasy, right? There's just a world that needs exploring. Like, I could do things to move the story forward. Or I could just go out with the dog and see what's there. Because random shit is going to appear. It's like No Man's Sky, right? The promise of just an open world to explore is very, very exciting. So there's going to be people that start playing Fallout 4 and never complete it. And that's both interesting and also kind of sad, right? Because the whole reason why you pick up a game is because you want to have an experience and you want to complete it. So you can be like, oh, wow, yeah, I did. I made it to the end. I finished that game and I got all those things, or I got most of these things, or I didn't get this ending, but I'm going to try later. And there are going to be people who don't have that experience because they're just going to continuously be exploring in that world, and that's okay. But Tomb Raider is also not going to be a small game.
No. But the first one wasn't small either.
It was not. You know, and so I started, like, having the adult conversation with myself where I went, hey, self, Black Ops is going to take time. Fallout 4 is going to take time. Tomb Raider is also going to take time. Not to mention,
and ain't nobody got time for that.
There's DLC for Syndicate that's going to drop. By the way, you have not finished all the DLC stuff for the Batman game yet. Hey, have we mentioned the new sandboxes in Disney Infinity? So I started kind of looking at the entire line of what's to come. Oh, and I haven't even turned on Halo 5 Guardians yet. So I was like, I think in the whole line of things, I'm going to have to put a hold on this one. And really, ultimately, it came down to, do I want to be able to talk about Black Ops 3 when it first releases? Or do I want to be able to talk about Tomb Raider when it first releases? And I want to talk Tomb Raider. So I have opted to go Tomb Raider first, and I will come back to Black Ops 3, because I'm not going to play multiplayer, so there's no real need for me to jump in right at day one, because the only advantage is to get up to speed and to get better weapons and things like that for multiplayer, and I'm not going to be doing that. I'm only going to be playing the campaign, so I can wait until Christmas or after that for that. So I'm going to be jumping on Tomb Raider when it comes out this week. So next week you will hear me talking in depth about it. But ultimately, I have way too many other things to play. Like, I haven't touched Destiny. Guys, I haven't touched Destiny in 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I didn't
I
didn't do any of the Halloween stuff.
I got my mask, but I didn't do any.
My light is, like, under 300. I have not run the raid yet. Like,
maybe it's time for you to do that in moderation.
Well, I told you that Holiday was going to be a lot less of me playing Destiny. But here's the thing. Holiday will end. I will complete Tomb Raider. I will complete Black Ops 3. I have completed the story in Syndicate. I will go back to Destiny.
Just when?
I will. And here's the thing. Like, I'm looking forward to it because I will play Halo 5 before I go back to Destiny. Because I do want to do a real Halo to Destiny comparison. There are a few that are out there floating, and I've tried really hard not to read any of them because I don't want to be influenced one way or another. But it's coming, folks. It's coming. So that. And all kinds of other stuff that's coming this holiday, too. But for now, one thing for you to look forward to is going to be Rise of the Tomb Raider coming next week. And I'm probably also going to do some watch me play video, so.
Really?
Yeah. I've got a new RAM coming for the Capture Mac. It should be here on Monday. So adding another 16 gigs to that machine. So it is now set up in the living room. The capture bridge is ready to go.
Oh, goody.
Got the wireless keyboard. Got the wireless mouse.
Awesome.
Got my M155 games monitor so I can see what I'm playing up close and capture it on the screen. So it's about to go down. So keep your eyes open for that.
All right. I will.
And once a month, Panda will in fact be coming over to the Casa for us to do a Let's Play Together.
Let's play together.
Yeah. See, we're making moves. There's going to be video, guys. What? Crazy.
What?
Oh, my God. It's crazy. So, yeah, big moves there. But I have an anime to talk about for this show. Panda, I know you've got some things to talk about. So I'm going to let you go ahead and talk about those things. And I'll wrap up with my anime because I kind of dominated the podcast last week.
Okay. Great.
And I believe that sharing is caring.
You talked a little bit about Tomb Raider, and now it's good to talk a little bit about it because, like,
it's worth talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, it is coming out by the time you guys hear this week, I think Tuesday.
Yep. 10th.
And I mean, I've been watching a lot of the trailers, and like the commercials are pretty much everywhere on Hulu for me. Like they seem to know I'm a gamer, and they target me with all of the gaming stuff. Which I don't understand how they're doing that, but I know it's like an algorithm or whatever.
No, it's based off of you signed into an account, so they keep track of the things that you watch.
But I'm on Hulu, and I'm not watching gaming things on Hulu.
I know, but basically there are profiles of, hey, people who tend to like things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Family Guy are typically...
Okay, then that's how they got me.
That's how they got you.
Because okay, I love like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh,
people who tend to watch Scandal and Gilmore Girls are typically millennials.
Women.
Or women in their 40s who wish they were millennials. So let's show them all the Lifetime stuff.
Okay, so that's what's the deal. Yeah, anyway.
It's not magic. It's not magic. It's analytics.
They have me pegged down to a science. But anyway. So, I mean, I've been seeing all the trailers and stuff, and, like, I think I've been seeing the GameStop commercials where they talk about the Python hand cannon that she's going to get in the game.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I kind of liked how in the first game, one, you didn't get guns or access to a gun or two until later on in the game.
They right, because really we were establishing right. Lara Croft.
And, I mean, and I feel like the way that they're setting this game up, it's a year after Yamatai. It's a year after everything that happened to her and her crew on that island. And I know that we've seen trailers where she's, like, talking to a shrink, so clearly there are some boundaries between reality and unreality
yep.
that she is trying to connect and, you know, try to figure herself out through the experience. And I am just a little concerned because I did some research. I have an idea of where the story is going to go from this point.
Oh.
Because pretty much what I feel like is going to happen is...
Well, what's this the story at the point? Because, again, remember, not everybody played
right.
Tomb Raider.
So in the first reboot from Crystal Dynamics, Laura is not the Tomb Raider that we have established if we played video games before. She is young. She's inexperienced. She loves research, and that's what she's doing. She's on this boat with this crew and her friend who's got lots of money, or at least her parents do, to fund this expedition to find the lost island of Yamatai, where there's this prophecy of this goddess who was pretty much eternal and could or had supernatural abilities that allowed her to control the weather. But no one's ever been able to find this place. And through some, I don't want to say hijinks, but through a lot of deduction and research, Laura has this idea and this instinct to try out this particular place. And it turns out that they happen to find it in, like, the Devil's Triangle or whatever they call it in the game. But they get stranded there. And she's stranded from everybody, so she's really learning how to survive. Like, she was caught by some primitive dude, had to get out of that, had to start a fire, had to get out of her wet clothes, had to, like, kill a deer. Like, she had to learn how to survive. And, like, we see all those great elements in the lore that those of us who have played the games from yesteryear and whatever, we get to see her develop. And by the end of the game, because I've seen the end of the game, but I haven't finished my game of Tomb Raider, I'm at the part where it's all windy and you're fighting all the wind samurai things leading up to the big ending, but I'm pretty close.
Yeah, but, you need to finish that.
But from what I understand of the ending, the few people who have been stranded on this island and have begun worshiping Himiko, I think is her name, mm-hmm. Believe that Laura's friend, whose name I can't remember now, because she's Asian.
Remember her name because she's Asian?
No, I can't remember her name, but because she is Asian and the Yamatai was like
you it. You forgot the book.
I did. Because she's Asian, I forgot. No. But they believe that...
Why do you always sound so racist?
I do. But they believe that Lara's friend, who was on this expedition with them, is like the next one to be Himiko. So they abduct her to do this ceremony to one see if she's worthy or not. Which at first, play through this game, I didn't get it all, but believe it or not, when you go through the tombs that you find, a lot of them have names.
Yep.
And the first time I played, I was like, oh, it's just an unforgotten tomb or whatever. But if you're really paying attention to everything that Laura's collecting and thinking about and researching, you actually find out that some of these tombs were in memory of girls who were selected to attempt to become Himiko and failed, like the yep. Temple of the Unworthy. And the Temple of the Forgotten, and, like, I was like, oh, my God. Like, they're throwing all this information at you, and we're just too blind to see
right,
it.
Right, because you are, as a player, not trained to look at that. You're just like, story, this is the plot, solve the puzzle, do this.
Oh, yeah, she's a Tomb Raider, let me get in this tomb and get this money, and you're not really thinking about what what's the purpose of the tomb? Like, what is the function of the tomb?
And what are, why are the trinkets that you're gathering
so important?
And primarily very female, feminine in there.
And, right. And it blew my mind because, like, I was watching my boyfriend replay it and I was like, oh my God, knowing what I know now, like, now I get what, and like the brain just starts to swell and you feel so important. But anyway, at the end of the game, you have ascended into this, you know, you're still not the Laura that we know, but we see the foundation being built. And that strong, confident Laura that we have come to know is emerging. She's transforming. And she
Why
ends
do you
up,
struggle so hard with saying Lara Croft?
Because I want to say Laura all the time, and it's Lara.
There's no O. Lara. Thank you.
Lara. And she ends up saving her friend and the few people who managed to make it to the end of the game.
The very few.
Because there aren't many. You have a big party when you show up, and when the dawn comes, there ain't too many of you standing.
True.
But she manages to save her friend from this very horrible fate, because there's probably a good chance she wouldn't have, made it and been reborn as this entity, but that's how that ends. And now this game comes a year after, and like I said, Lara is struggling with coping with all the loss and all the hardship that she had to endure while trying just to survive on
wasn't really a walk in the park, and people don't just get rescued after, you know, losing about six or so people.
She lost like 2/3 of her group. No lie.
And so, you know, being a young person or being just, you know, a human being of any sort, you're going to have some emotional and physical fallout.
Baggage that you just need to sift through and like try to understand and accept.
And I like that in this game, that's one of the driving things behind the game, that, you know, you don't just pop back from that and just be a person.
Like, oh, that's my reality now.
And then wake up the next morning and be like, a pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks sounds great. Let me get on my Uggs and let's do this. Like,
In Rise of the Tomb Raider, like I said, we've come in after, like, in that first year of trauma for anyone. Like, the first year is usually the hardest year, which is why we see her in therapy. And her whole experience on Yamatai has been covered up by this organization. And I think it's like Trinity or something with Trinity in it. And she is so obsessed with proving that, one, everything that happened on Yamatai happened. Because remember, she is unstable emotionally right now. And for someone to come in and sweep it under the rug and make it not exist is like shaking her being to the core. She's obsessed with, you know,
Proving that it all really happened, and that she's not nuts.
So she becomes so focused on finding truth out about the myths of the world, and this is where the whole tomb raiding thing comes into. You see her searching, and I think she goes to, like, Siberia to, like, try to find out some more stuff. And while she's there, she finds out something about immortality, which, if you played the games from back in the day, then, like, it's a good way to...
Tomb Raider games from back in the day. Yes.
Right. It's going to tie into that, because I believe, I mean, you played more of them than I did, that in the already established canon of her future, she is, like, descended from, like, gods.
So it depends on where you play the game and which games you consider to be canon and not. Right. Because in the game where...
Is it Underworld or Overworld?
Underworld. I believe, is the one that you're talking about. In the game where, ultimately, it was like a mixture of Canterbury Tales, and what they were alluding to was that there was some kind of magical, otherworldly, spiritual involvement in Lara's family. And what they lined up was that it was possible that Lara's mother didn't die, but that Lara's mother actually was taken to Avalon. And so there was a possibility that, like her mother, Lara had the ability to get there. And one of the things that the game kind of sort of alluded to, and a lot of people ran with his fan fiction and ideas afterwards, was that Lara's father, after losing Lara's mother, what he went through and the reason why he ended up becoming the explorer he became
was
that he was trying to find a way to open up that portal to allow her to come back.
Okay. So...
But that was at the very end. Like, that was one of the last games before the
Tomb Raider. But I feel like they're trying to make sure that, and they reboot. However they're going to lead this new, because this is a reboot. But I think they're trying to pay homage to some of the stuff that they've already established.
Game in the rebooted franchise. Like, they're not rebooting another Tomb Raider game.
No.
This is the second game in the reboot franchise thing. Right. So this is its own canon. But they are trying to, I think, pay the right
hold on to the essence of, I think, what was going on.
And the things that made them love Lara and made them want to do the reboot in the first place. You know,
I think in this game, Rise of the Tomb Raider, I think we're going to be dealing with so many levels of struggle in this one girl. Like, she's struggling within herself. And then she's putting herself into these, you know, these adventures. Like I said, I think she goes to, like, Siberia, to some ancient city, and to unlock some stuff, like, figure out, like, trying to tie some more stuff into, you know, what happened at Yamatai and where this immortality thing, because they believed Himiko was immortal, and they proved that that was not the case in the first one. But she's just trying to, she's trying to stable herself, but she's got her friction between, she's fighting herself, she's, you know, trying to, you know, keep this organization from, you know, profiting off of all these, you know, all this treasure and all this knowledge. And obviously, she's obviously still fighting the elements, because, I mean, she's still going to be fighting animals and other people and the environment, and then hopefully rising up from that again. So once again, I think we're going to have more fine tuning, and we're going to see her really fully come to terms with everything and, like, come out of the flames like a phoenix would, so to speak. And then I think by the end of this game, we're going to get the Lara that we are expecting. Not to mention, we are getting another game from this, because it was leaked out at, looking at my notes, at Gamescom. Square Enix did reveal that a third game was, for the rebooted franchise, was in development. So we're getting something after this goodie already.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the first game performed really well, and it was a solid game.
I agree.
People enjoyed it. And I think that it came out at a point in time where the industry really needed a game with a strong female lead to prove that it could be financially successful, right? Because the bullshit line that we've heard all the time is that part of the reason why there aren't more stronger female leads in games is because primarily the gaming audience is men, and they want to play games with a character that they can identify with and that they want to be, and most guys don't want to be women. And everybody who had a sense or could put two thoughts together was like, that doesn't really add up, because a hero is a hero whether they have boobs or a penis. And if you write a character that is strong and interesting and put them in interesting places, people will be interested in them. And then, you know, some reveals started coming out, like, oh, the lead character in Portal is actually a woman, Shell. And then we revealed that in Mirror's Edge, the lead character, the one that you play, that also was very critically acclaimed and did very well, also a woman. And the Tomb Raider game dropped, and it just seemed to really kind of put the final nail in that coffin of, you guys don't know what you're talking about, because guess what? The majority of the community is actually not guys. It's actually women. We just don't shout it from the rooftops a lot.
Right.
But the majority of, especially in the casual gaming set, it's predominantly women. So you should probably rethink that model just a little bit. And
tweak it to the left a little. Tweak it to
just,
the left.
Just to the left a little. And I just saw a stat that came out that said that in the U.S., the current gen consoles, sales are primarily heavily swinging female than male. So they're, for the first time in, you know, a couple of decades, more gaming consoles are owned by women and purchased by women than men. And it's because I think the stigma of being a gamer is gone. You know, we've had a lot of really strong females to kind of crash that
glass idea. Ball.
You know, you've got people like Crix Lee over at Gekken and Felicia Day. And, you know, you've got positive portrayals of geeky, smart women on TV with, you know, Big Bang Theory. And now, you know, we've got Jessica Jones and we've got Agent...
Carter.
Thank you. Agent Carter. Like, the bullshit around the thought is gone, and so I'm really kind of over that argument.
I'm glad you are.
It's not surprising that Tomb Raider got a second game because it was financially successful. Two, the game was done really well. Crystal Dynamics puts together really great games.
I love you, Crystal Dynamics. I've loved you since Samurai Showdown.
Everybody knew that there would be a third game because there was a second game. Like, there's no company today that goes into a title going, okay, if we're going to have the franchise conversation, we've got one good sequel in us and that's it. Everything right. is a trinity or better. So we all knew that there was going to be a third game when they announced that they're the Rise of the Tomb Raider. Like, the story was going to continue.
Yeah, well, they confirmed it at Gamescom.
Well, they didn't mean to confirm it.
No, it was like, oops. Sorry, guys. Totally didn't mean to say that to you.
Okay, but you get excited talking about something that you're really passionate about, and then you have an oopsie. So
yeah, you have that.
Thanks for the oopsie.
Brain fart.
We kind of already knew it, but thank you for, like, legitimately accidentally confirming that it is a real thing. Because you will get my money for that game, too. Because I did go ahead and pre-order it. I don't really prescribe to the whole don't pre-order games thing. Screw that. If there's a game that I really want to own and I want it digitally day one, I'm going to pre-order it, and I'm not going to feel bad about it.
All right, one last thing about
Tomb Raider. Do it!
And it's not really a factual thing, but it's just a little funny thing I was playing with. So, I mean, Uncharted, Nathan Drake.
Oh, here we go. Are we going to have the Drake as Lara Croft with pants on conversation?
No. We're going to
have it again.
No, we're going to have just a brief acknowledgement that Nathan Drake should be tapping Lara Croft from this reboot. Like, they should be having... They should get somehow cross them over, like Naughty Dog and Crystal Dynamics should be like, look.
So you want to make Naughty Dynamics?
Naughty Dynamics, and like just have this blending. Even if it's just like an FMV of like them both at the same place, having two different adventures, but just have that parallel between the two of them. Like, I think that would be genius.
Well, I think it would be genius if Crystal Dynamics and Naughty Dog fused to make a new game development juggernaut, because that it would be a juggernaut.
Oh my god!
Like, I've had Naughty Dynamics or Crystal Dog. I don't care.
Like, I've had wet dreams about this fusion.
Yeah, I know you have.
And I was like, please, I'd love for it to happen. So that's,
I'm just surprised that you haven't written fanfic yet about Larry and Nathan.
I am too old to be writing fanfic.
No, you're not. Don't lie. I've read some of your shit.
Calm down.
When you put it out on your live journal under that name that I'm not supposed to know about, but
that's,
I do.
Shut up, for one. And two, I write better now. Because that was drivel. That was shit. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. So that's the Tomb Raider bit. I have been recently playing on my Steam account this game that everyone has been ranting and raving about, and I'm kind of glad that I've jumped into it. And it's called Undertale, which you can get it for $10 on Steam. I think you can get it other places, but I got mine on Steam.
I really want to play Duck Game, but go ahead.
And people have been saying stuff about Duck Game.
I know. I feel like we need to play it, and I feel like it needs to be a watch us play.
Because, yeah. Okay, I'm down for that.
I feel like that's what it needs to be.
But anyway, so Undertale's what I'm talking about, and it's this role-playing game developed by this indie developer, Toby Fox. And... like I said, you can get it on Steam for your PC or for your Mac. So us Mac users are not in the lurch on this one. It got released in September, so I'm a couple of months late on talking about it. because I wasn't too sure. Because sometimes the hype train is simply that. It's a hype train.
And sometimes it's not even a hype train. It's just a hype caboose.
Right. Like, and I didn't want to jump on it and be like, yeah, I jumped on it when everybody else did. Like, I wanted to come into it.
And then you find out that there's, like, no food car. There's only a quiet car on the caboose. You're like, damn.
Like, either it's a party bus or, like, it's like an MBTA bus with, like, six people on it. And you're like, I jumped on this for what? But anyway.
Get to Haymarket. That's why you jump
on it. That's why you jump on it. But anyway. So in Undertale, you play this character who later on in the game, and this is some information that I should not know, but I did some research so I could talk a little bit more about it.
And by that, you mean you watch people play?
I watched one person play, and then I looked up some articles and stuff, because I can read. I should take the time to do some reading instead of just watching. But in my game, as far as I know, I am this character. I can't tell if I'm a boy or a girl yet, because it is like 8-bit pixel. But I am this character who has fallen. I've fallen from something. I think, like, into a hole or something. And I've fallen into what is called the underground. And I met this flower that seemed really happy and nice. And was like, hey, you've fallen through the hole. I'm very sorry. I hope you're okay. Well, since you're here, I should tell you how things work here so that you don't get hurt any further. And like, he shoots out these little white things, and he's like, these are little love points, and everything runs on love points here. So, see this little heart down here? This is your soul. It's very important, and you have to keep it safe. So I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, oh, this flower is so nice. Like, this flower's got my back. I don't even know who I am. He doesn't even know who I am. And then all of a sudden, his face changes, and he's like, you are such an idiot. And he's like, down here, it's kill or be killed, and you're my next target. And he starts throwing these love points, which aren't really love points, at me. And, like, you have to, your heart's in this box. And you have to keep, it's like a bullet hell, sort of, but like a very basic bullet hell. And you have to keep your heart from being hit by whatever comes into the box, because your heart can't leave the box. And, like, I'm dodging, and, like, his face is getting more and more distorted, and, like, I'm freaking out. And then it stops all of a sudden, because right before one happens to hit me, like, this yellow block comes and pushes it out of the way. And then this character rolls up and kind of bitch slaps this flower out of the ground, and he goes flying away like Team Rocket. And this other character kind of looks like a Torin from WoW. Like, definitely has, like, a cow-like resemblance, but has a nicer set of eyes, has lashes, so I definitely know it was a girl, or I believe it was a girl. And the name is Toriel, and she's like, I'm so sorry that horrible thing tried to attack you. You know, I work over at this, like, shrine thing, which I'm going to take you to, because I need to teach you how you're going to survive here. You know, and, like, you kind of don't want to follow her, but, you know, you have no
other option. Well, because you already learned that flowers want to fucking kill you, and you're like,
that,
devil.
That one flower wanted to end my existence. So I'm just like, I really don't feel like I should trust you, but I follow her anyway, because it's pretty much like this black screen until you encounter something. Like, it's very, very, very bland. And I know they did that for a reason, because they want the narrative to speak for itself. And so far, in my playthrough, there isn't too much going on. But from what I've read, things are going to open up in such an amazing way. So she pretty much explains that, you know, I've fallen from this hole in this mountain, because back in the day, the world was inhabited by monsters and humans. The monsters all went underground and the humans stayed on top. But there was this magician person, this sorcerer person, that put a barrier between the underworld and the surface world so that neither the two shall meet. But the barrier wasn't super strong, and there's one place in the world, or at least in this area, there's one little place that, you know, if people fall through, humans can fall into the underworld, but the monsters can't come up.
Uh-huh.
And I happen to be someone who's fallen through, and I'm a kid, mind you. And she's like, well, this place is full of puzzles which will try to trick you and will try to hurt you. There are monsters here that may try to attack you, but she's like, my word of thumb is to always have a pleasant conversation with them. You don't have to resort to violence. So, like, she teaches you, you know, how to navigate, how to look for potential parts of puzzles and worlds. And then she teaches you the whole fight mechanism, which I think is the most interesting thing, because, like she said, you could strike up conversations. So they give you the chance, they give you the option in this, you know, turn-based RPG type of thing to when you encounter something or someone, that you can either fight them or you can find the way to properly communicate with them and resolve the fight without actual violence. And then
That's interesting.
And this is where it gets really good, because there are multiple endings in this game. And even after playing the game one way in one save file, when you go to play that second playthrough, things that you've done in your first file will somehow manifest themselves into your next one. So they do keep building up onto each other. So it is one immersive playthrough, as opposed to this is my good ending file, this is my bad ending, and this is my mix.
Right.
Like, they're finding ways. So the only way that you can really have a pure, clean playthrough of the game is to completely get rid of all of your files on the game. And the way people have been playing this game is, you know, there are people who have taken the action of even bosses, because like I said, you don't have to fight people. You can resolve stuff without violence. And there are people who have done clean playthroughs where they don't fight a single thing. And the ending's been completely different. And there have been some people who've done half and half, and to see what happens with that. And then there's obviously the kill everything, which you can do. But depending on how you're playing and who you pick to, you know, spare, or who you choose not to spare, will influence the game. And some people are saying that this game is, I believe, the sequel to Mother 3, which was the Japanese sequel to Earthbound.
Okay.
That we didn't get here. We didn't get Mother 3 here, I don't think. So for people who really loved that franchise of games, the Earthbound / Mother, like, this is up their alley. I mean, it's really, so far for me, has been kind of light outside of that encounter with that dick-ass flower. I'm on my way.
Dick-ass flower.
I'm navigating some tunnels right now, and I feel kind of bad because Tori Elva, nice, and I'm using air quotes here because I don't know how long Tori Elva is actually going to be an ally, really. But she left me somewhere with a cell phone, and she's like, don't go anywhere, though, because it's not safe. And, of course, I was like, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want. And I'm navigating.
Why? You see, this is how you get in trouble, because you don't listen.
As I
said, here's the phone. This is safe. Don't move. And you're like, whatever. I do what I want, no, Cartman.
Well, she gave me the phone, and she's like, you know, if you have any questions, you can call me, but stay right here. And, like, she leaves, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to just stay here. And as I'm walking through some of these rooms, like, she calls me, and she's like, I hope you stayed where you are. Like, I hope you're being safe. I'll be back soon. And I'm like, okay, but
because there's probably some stuff that's not safe for you in the house, but you're gonna find out the hard way. You know, hard head makes a soft ass.
You hate that to the truth. But it's super cute. Do I feel it's justified for being $10? I actually do, because I'm that kind of person who loves games that have consequences for actions. So I mean, and the simple fact that one. You know, your save files, even though they're separate, are still kind of not separate. It's so intriguing to me as someone who likes seeing what a subtle change in a decision or a comment will have in a game. Like, I'm very excited to see what will happen to my character and who I'll encounter and who I won't and stuff like that. But like I said, it's available on Steam. And I mean, I think you can get it on, like, you know, GOG or any other place that you can get all that type of stuff. But like I said, I got mine on Steam, and I'm having a field day now. So if you haven't experienced this yet and want to, I suggest you hop on it, because it's actually a train worth boarding.
Well, all right. So, and the name again?
Is Undertale.
And the price again?
Is $10. $9.99.
And you can find it on?
Steam.
Excellent. Well, then I guess the only thing left to do is to talk about the anime that I wanted to talk about. I've been watching a bunch of anime. Even though it seemed like the majority of new stuff this season was kind of light, as far as what's airing on Crunchyroll and Funimation and Hulu, which is the main places that I go to watch anime, there are a couple of series that do stand out.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is one that is called... Attempt to say it
slow
in Japanese. All right, here we go. Subete ga F ni Nauru.
Okay.
So I don't think that's too bad. But basically, it's called Everything Becomes F, The Perfect Insider.
The Perfect Insider.
Yeah. So what Everything Becomes F is based off of a mystery novel. Okay. So it's a whodunit, which is why I was like, Panda really needs to watch this.
My gosh.
After I got into the first episode. So the story basically focuses on this guy named Saikawa. Okay, and he is runs a research lab. And he's got an assistant that he didn't actually really want to be his assistant named, I'm just going to call her by her first name, Moe, because her last name is like Nishinosono, and it's a lot of syllables. So we're just going to call her Moe, or I'm okay. Just going to call her Nishi. And Nishi is the daughter of Saikawa's mentor, who is brilliant, brilliant guy. And Nishi's parents died. She's basically become infatuated with Saikawa, who I think, like, if he really could be, would be a hikikomori. Like, he just likes doing his research, but he really prefers, like, being alone and isn't very emotional and doesn't like to go out, but he's super, super smart. Mm. Very similar to the character in Rinpo Katane.
Okay.
Brilliant, young, but affected, if you would, right?
All
right. So, basically, they end up working together to solve cases for their own enjoyment, because Nishi thinks that she also is very brilliant, and when she met Saikawa when she was a kid, the reason why she first was impressed by him was because she used to do magic tricks, and people couldn't figure out how she was doing these illusions, and he figured out immediately all of them. And so it was like, I hate you because you kind of nullify the fact that I think I'm so smart, but I can't get past you. And ultimately turned into a, you're so smart to see through my stuff, I think I love you.
Ain't yeah. that the way that happened?
Isn't it?
That happened, though.
And so basically there is this other very brilliant young woman named Shiki Magata, and she is a doctor. And she basically got her doctorate in programming. So she's a brilliant scientist, but she was tried for killing her parents when she was 14.
Okay. Convicted?
No, because basically everyone said that she was insane because she had multiple personalities.
Okay.
So she ended up living in isolation on a private island where she just conducted, like, her own experiments and things like that. The only way you could meet her or talk with her was through video chat because she never left the island. And Nishi was granted, again, because she's from money and wealth and her family is well established, she gets an audience with Dr. Magata. And so the episodes run in kind of almost like a Memento, the movie way, in that, not that it necessarily plays in reverse, because the story isn't revealed in reverse, but it's revealed in vignettes. So every episode has a little bit of what's going on right now. There's flashbacks to the conversation that Nishi had with Magata before they ended up going to her research lab, because she's able to line up a visit for Saikawa and herself to actually see Dr. Magata in person, which Saikawa is all about, because he has a admiration and a fondness for Dr. Magata, which Nishi doesn't really like, but she likes the guy, so she's like, I'll do whatever. So the episodes have this flash of what's going on right now, which ultimately is that Dr. Magata was killed before they got to the island. And nobody can figure out how. Because the way that her room was set up, there's only one entrance to the room. There's no other way out of the room. It's just this one long hallway. She had her own private security system set up on the island that took video all the time. And so the video on the door shows that nobody entered or left her room.
Okay.
But she was murdered. Her arms were chopped off. She was placed on a table wearing a wedding dress.
Okay.
And so everyone's like, well, whoever did this is obviously still on the island because they couldn't leave. Because the only way on or off the island is either via big ship or helicopter. And they got dropped off in a helicopter and nobody left on the helicopter except for the guy that flew them out, who was the director of the island. He was coming back in like 45 minutes to pick them up. So when he came back with Magata's little sister, they were like, yeah, she's been killed. So you need to get on the radio and call the police because none of the communication stuff downstairs is working. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Gives him a thumbs up. So they bring the younger sister down to see her older sister. And while that happens, the director gets killed, stabbed in the back of the neck with a pair of scissors, and the radio in the helicopter ripped out.
Of course. How convenient.
So everyone's like, all right, well, the killer's still here. And so Saikawa and Nishi are trying to figure out who and how Magata got killed, so they know who did this, so they know who to go to and can stop the insanity, catch the killer, and all that kind of stuff. But it's very interesting in how the episodes work, because you have a small section of them going through the process of asking questions and discovering things to try and figure out how she got killed, because at first they're like, it must have been suicide, she must have been so lonely. And they're like, it couldn't have been suicide because her arms were amputated at the shoulder.
Right, how could she chop off one and then be able to chop off her other arm? That's...
And then place her body
How would she
on the table and put on a white wedding dress that is pure white all the way
down. Did the wedding dress have sleeves?
No.
Okay.
No sleeves.
She could have put the wedding dress on and then cut her arms off.
Blood would have been everywhere. The dress is pure white.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, you bleed when you...
Right, when you cut you cut shit off, you bleed. So,
obviously, she was killed. Body was cleaned up. Arms were amputated. Cleaned up again. And then she was put in the dress, because there's not a spot of anything on the dress. Or on the veil. So, her arms are someplace. They can't find them. And so they've just left her in this hallway because they can't get off the island. So it's just this very interesting mix-up of a piece of what's going on now with trying to problem solve. There's usually a flashback to the initial conversation that Nishi had with Magata, because she seemed very, very focused on asking a very, very specific line of questions to Magata, not about her parents and whatnot, but she was more focused on why and how Nishi came to like Saikawa, because she already knew that she liked Saikawa, but she couldn't figure out why, and Nishi was very protective of that. And then you have another segment, which is going into Magata's past, where you learn some things, like when she was 13, you know, the year before her parents passed away and she supposedly killed them, how she had started to develop these personalities and embraced them and flaunted them regularly to her uncle, and then ultimately seduced her uncle because she wanted to be a woman. And then, as it looks like in these episodes, helped to convince either her uncle or just let him in on the plan to kill her parents. Like, the last episode I watched, the ending sequence with old Makata memories, which are all narrated by her uncle. She bought a knife from a fishing village guy that she said that she was going into the woods and she wanted to catch some fish and cut them and clean them and, you know, pick some flowers. So he gave her this serrated knife and was like, this is the one that you gotta buy. And so her uncle came to dinner with her parents, who seemed just really loving, but I don't know. I could be wrong, But in the flashback, they seem pretty loving. And they left the room to go get the food because she came from a well-to-do family. And she's like, "Uncle, I have a gift for you." And he opens up the box and it's the knife. And she's like, "It's an implement of freedom." And you're just like, So it's very interesting in that there's a piece of the present and the far distant past and then the recent past in every one of these episodes, and the element of the whodunit and trying to figure out, like, no, really, like, how did this happen? Because they're two security guards. All of them, they both seem to be at their post the entire time. There's this fail in the system that has happened, so they can't get access to the internet and some things, and they believe that the system was actually designed from day one to fail on this day because there's nothing that's gone wrong with the system, and none of the programmers that could have done anything to it quick enough were near the systems to do it. So it's this very weird, like, well, then really, who did do it? Like, if they're really and truly, is there only one way into the room? And they've gone through all of the pieces of her compartment so far that you can see, and it appears like there is. And her body was stuffed in the midpoint of the room, and when their mechanical door opened, it came flowing out into the room, and the light shifted, but they watched the video, and there's seemingly nobody that gets out or moves anywhere. So it's a very interesting whodunit, because you want to know, with one way in, like, how could somebody pull this all off? And with all the cameras that are there that were going, and including the backups, like, there's no indication of any foul play. So you want to know who done it. And then you also want to know, like, well, did she kill her parents or not? Was she really crazy? Did she just make up those personalities so that she could do what she wanted to do? Was she that kind of brilliant lunatic or not? And for such a young woman, like, how do you have all that in you? And then ultimately, you also want to have some kind of resolution, because you feel for Nishi this entire time, because she seems like she's just wholeheartedly devoted to Saikawa, who really just is apathetic. Like, that's what he is and what he does. And so he has no feeling for Saikawa, for Nishi, it seems, in any way, shape, or form. He constantly says stuff that hurts her feelings and does not perceive that he's done anything wrong or said anything wrong, even when she's crying. And so you're just like, dude, like, just be a human being for, like, 1 minute, just one time, and it'll be okay. So you have all these different pieces that get played upon in every episode, and they're played upon really well. So I'm really looking forward to the conclusion of this series. Like I said, it is called Everything Becomes F, The Perfect Insider. Obviously, it has something to do with, you know, it being an inside job, obviously, but who is the perfect insider? You know,
it's got me written all over it, bro.
It does. It really does. Like, you need to start watching it. It is on Crunchyroll. It is also on Funimation, so you can check it out. Like I said, it is based on a mystery novel, so you can check out the novel that it was based on as well. And the it's just known as Everything Becomes F because it's a message that people find when they go into a room and they're trying to figure out, well, what the fuck does that mean? Everything becomes F. Like, did she not finish a sentence? Or is F a thing? Like, what? What?
What is F?
What?
What the F?
What's in the box? It's a mystery. So make sure that you check it out on Crunchyroll, on Funimation. I can't wait for the end of the series. And, you know, at this point, I'm 5 episodes in. And I'll be honest, I still don't have a clue. Still don't have a clue. And you know, I'm pretty observant with these guys as to who killed her and how. I do have some thoughts on whether or not she made up.
Let me watch them and then we can have a hash out.
Okay. We'll do that. We'll hash it out on a future episode of our podcast, which you can find on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also find us pretty much everywhere on the web that you want to find stuff. So, guys, if you have an Android device, you can find us in Google Play. That's right. Our podcast is in the Google Music Store. We're on your Googles.
Woo-hoo.
If you've got an iOS device, You can find us either on iTunes on your desktop or on your iOS mobile device through the podcast app. Just search for Electric Sisterhood, the Eshcast, and subscribe. Same thing on Google Play. Find us that way. Search us out. Subscribe. Get brand new episodes the moment that we put them out. We're also in Stitcher Radio. We're also on the VogNetwork.com. Pretty much any place on the net that you can go to find podcasts, we are there. So make sure that whatever flavor you prefer us in, that you find us on that platform and subscribe to ensure the moment we put out brand new episodes of our weekly podcast, you can get them for your oral pleasure. You should also check out other great, great, great entities, our teammates, our family. They put out great shows and great content on their respective websites. So make sure that you're checking out No Borders, No Race and everything going on at b3crew.com. Make sure that you're checking out on Wednesdays the live feeds, Let's Plays from our homeboy Hamsterman over at Smashed Rook. Live streaming on Twitch. All kinds of great games, both retro and current. Totally worth a watch, so make sure that you're checking those out. Also be on the lookout for great new things coming from the Issues Guy over at issuesprogram.com. Soon to be so much more, but for now, make sure you check that out. And our homies over at the Structure Network, loving everything that they're doing from comics to movies, wrestling, unboxing, gaming, TV recaps, everything. If it's nerdy, the team at the Structure Network is covering it. So make sure that you check out thestructurenetwork.com and everybody that is fam, b3crew.com, issuesprogram.com, smashrook.com, all great, great stuff, great podcasts and content. Check it all out. Share it on your socials. Hip your friends. Be the cool kid on your block. Because I said so.
Okay.
So with that, it's the time of the podcast where I turn to my sister and say, hey, yo, sis.
Hey, what's up?
What shit you digging this week?
Fat beats for my feets.
Oh, fat beats for your feet.
I like dancing, and I don't get to dance often, so I got to dance this week. It was the hypest thing of my week.
Oh, that's good times. That's good times.
What about you?
Truffle fries.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, truffle fries.
Hell yeah, truffle fries.
So with that, I'm Major Sissa.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Peace.